Hi, everybody. I'm Lacey.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Drew.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
Do you have to mock me?
How do you know it wasn't? How do you know it was mockery? Maybe
it was, liked it.
Maybe it was like, oh, that's a great idea, Bailey. Let's start doing a sing-songy like intro.
She was honoring you.
I've known you for 29 years.
Oh,
baby.
I was gonna say, Bailey, I'm 33, but then I was like, oh well, you know, I didn't know you before.
You think we knew each other as
29
like
here.
Eggs in the womb?
We hung out in the eggs.
How do you know we were on the same fallopian tube or ovary?
She could sense you.
I know. Hey, I saw a thing on TikTok because that's where I get most of my news.
Right.
And this isn't even news. But they said that like half siblings who share a mom tend to feel more like real siblings than half siblings that share a dad. And they think it's because it has to do with like sharing a womb. And like the nurturing parent.
Yeah, I feel like you're more likely to grow up with like
your mom's kids.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What are we talking about today, Lizzie?
Oh, are we ready to start?
Yeah. just a real quick. I was on vacation for the last week, so we haven't talked in probably 2 weeks, like in a recording way. So the listeners don't know because I've cut it all out, but for the first like 15 minutes of us recording, we were just shooting the shit.
I think it was like a half hour.
Okay, I'm looking at the time now and we haven't even hit 20 minutes. So
okay.
Well, there
we were talking before we started recording.
Okay. Yeah. God, Lacey, you're such a
crush. I'm not even counting the minutes. I'm just enjoying our time together.
Oh.
Oh, that was so cute of you. That's why Drew wanted to be like you.
I'm Bailey.
Welcome aboard.
It's crazy because, like, the first 10 years of my life, she told me I was adopted.
Sure.
Yeah, that wasn't a good lie. Because we looked very similar.
I was going to say, you guys
people thought we were
for sure came from the same people.
I also told Caden that we had a younger brother who his name was Ethan and he lived in the attic.
That's horrifying.
You're literally the worst sibling.
Well, I said that because at the time, Caden's bedroom had the door to the attic in it.
Yeah.
So, but really, just trying to.
you should have told them that. That's where Raggedy Ann is, and that's Annabelle.
Well, I think at the time I wasn't really familiar with Annabelle, but I was familiar with the fact that we had
children
A, B, C, D, and then it only made sense that we had an E living somewhere.
Ethan?
I don't know.
Really did not like Ethan.
Well, when she makes up a sibling, she can name it whatever she wants. All right, what are we talking about, Lacey?
Welcome aboard.
Oh. God, I wish we were on.
Okay, hold on. I was looking away when Lacey said welcome aboard, and when Bailey went, oh God, I legit thought I was going to look up and Lacey was going to be wearing a sailor hat.
Oh, man.
I was like, Lacey put on a sailor hat and said, welcome aboard.
Oh, I'm so disappointed in myself.
I know. I'm disappointed in you, too.
Wow, that would have been good. I'll have to keep in mind for future episodes.
Just
get into character a little bit more. Well, whatever your beliefs are regarding ghosts, ghost ships are real.
Okay.
A ghost ship is a ship, or just like any water vessel, essentially, that's found with no living crew on board and no explanation for what happened. They are just called ghost ships. Tonight, we're setting sail into some of the most chilling and unexplained tales ever to drift across the open sea. You better buckle up, because this whole episode's like this. I had a great time.
It's a nautical-themed episode.
Yep. These are stories of ships found eerily empty, sails still fluttering in the wind, of radio signals cut off mid-sentence, of entire crews vanished without a trace. Some of these ships were real, documented, boarded, investigated. Others exist only in the minds of sailors who swear they saw something glowing on the horizon. We are diving deep into the mystery of ghost ships. Whether fact, fiction, or something in between, these are stories that refuse to be forgotten. So tighten the sails, check the horizon, and hold fast. Because out here, some ships don't come back.
You know who is going to love that intro?
Is it your mom?
Yes. And you know what's going to be great? In a week, she's going to text us and say, I do love the intro.
I'm so excited. She is too. I hope she hears that and she's not like, oh, I shouldn't text him now. Do it, Jan.
Lacey, are you well?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, because it just feels like...
Okay, Bailey, real quick. She's been on maternity leave for quite some time. I don't know how much adult contact she gets. She spends a lot of time talking to her baby, so I just feel like...
I'm the baby.
When was the last time you left the house?
Yesterday, actually. I went to my mom's house, and we spent a lot of time talking to the baby.
She's just getting a little cabin fever.
Yeah. The first ship I'm going to tell you about was called the Mary Celeste.
I kind of like that name.
I do, too.
Like Celeste.
I like Celeste. I knew a Celeste once.
I've known two.
Yeah.
Or I know two. Oh,
I feel like Celeste can be shortened to CC. I'm not a fan.
I guess, but I like Celeste.
I like Celeste.
Yeah. The Mary Celeste, the case of the Mary Celeste, is one of the most enduring maritime mysteries of all time. Found adrift in the Atlantic Ocean in December of 1872, this American merchant brigantine, was discovered completely abandoned. Its crew vanished without a trace. What makes the Mary Celeste so haunting is not just that the ship was deserted, but that everything was almost perfectly intact. Let's go back to the beginning. The Mary Celeste set sail from New York City on November 7th, 1872, bound for Genoa, Italy, or Genoa. Genoa or Genoa?
Either way, I feel like you're butchering the language.
I think so, too. I figured as soon as I said it, one of you would immediately correct me.
Sorry, my mic was off. I believe it's Genoa.
Okay. On board were Captain Benjamin Briggs.
There's a kind of salami.
Yes.
Ooh. It's Genoa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that salami.
So they were heading to Genoa from New York City. On board were Captain Benjamin Briggs, his wife Sarah, their 2-year-old daughter Sophia, and a crew of 7. The next slide has a picture of the Briggs family. They also had an older son, Arthur, who was 7. He stayed home with his grandmother so that he could attend school. Does that baby look so goofy?
She's so bald.
So bald. And I don't know if it's just because it's such an old, old black and white thing, if she really was that bald, but...
I didn't want to be, like, mean, so I was going to literally text you guys and say, that's an ugly baby.
I knew it was going to come up, so I figured I would just address it head on. That
I feel like it's a little... It's nice to see, but it's a little abnormal to see someone smiling in this old of a photo.
Yeah, a lot of times they don't. And they both have a little bit of a smile on them.
Yeah.
You know why they don't smile in photos?
They're unhappy.
No, because...
life is hard.
In the olden days, it used to take so long to take a photo that...
No, they didn't want to hold the smile.
Yeah, it would just hurt.
Maybe they had bad teeth. Days. Olden days.
No, I just told you why they don't smile in the old photos. It's not because they have bad teeth.
So,
it's because it takes forever.
So we've got Captain Briggs, Sarah, Sophia, a crew of 7, so 10 people total on the ship. 7-year-old Arthur stayed home with his grandmother so that he could still go to school because this is November. The ship carried a cargo full of denatured alcohol. So denatured alcohol is ethanol, which is the alcohol found in, like, alcohol that we drink. That's been modified via additives. So you can't drink it. So nobody's going to get drunk on this cargo load of alcohol. It's used as, like, a cleaning agent. It has industrial uses. Captain Briggs was known to be a devout, responsible, and competent seaman. This was not a risky voyage. It was supposed to be a routine crossing.
But it was not. You said seaman.
I did say seaman. On December 5th, 1872, so almost a month, because they left on November 7th, almost a month, more than 400 miles east of the Azores, which is a group of islands about 1,000 miles to the west of mainland Portugal, a British brig called the De Gratia spotted the Mary Celeste adrift. As they approached, the crew saw the sails were partially set and were flapping loosely in the wind. The ship seemed seaworthy, so there was no obvious signs of damage. They didn't have any distress flags up, but there was no response when they attempted to contact the ship. No people, just silence. So they sent a boarding party. So the boarding party from the De Gratia found the ship completely deserted, and the lifeboat was missing, along with all 10 people who had been aboard. But the ship itself was in remarkably good condition. The cargo of alcohol was intact. The crew's belongings were undisturbed, including valuables they brought along with them. The ship's log was still in place, and the last entry was dated November 25th, which was 10 days earlier. That meant the ship had been drifting for at least a week and a half. The entry, which was written around 8 a.m., placed the ship near the island of Santa Maria in the Azores. So, what happened? Here's where things get weird. The food stores were untouched. There was no sign of violence, mutiny, or piracy. No blood, no torn clothing, just absence of all people. So speculation began almost immediately. Some believed that the alcohol cargo had started to leak and that the captain feared an explosion, then ordered everybody into the lifeboat as a precaution, intending to return once it was safe, but something went wrong once they were in the lifeboat. Maybe the rope snapped, maybe the water was rough, and the lifeboat tipped over or whatever, flipped over. Others suggested more sinister causes, like mutiny by the crew, but there was no sign of violence, and the valuables were all untouched. Pirates was a possibility, but again, nothing was taken, so like, what did the pirates do? Weather could have played a role, but meteorological records didn't show any kind of big storms in the area at the time. Then there were also the theories of sea monsters, like a giant squid. Alien abduction was a theory. Some said the ship was cursed because it had had an unlucky past. And by that, I mean it had crashed once.
Mm-hmm.
So some said, it was a ghost ship. There was a persistent rumor that suggested Captain Briggs went mad and murdered everybody before getting in the lifeboat and taking off, but no evidence of violence. Right, he dumped all the bodies overboard, then cleaned it up. And then the lifeboat was never found. Nobody from the Mary Celeste was ever seen again. No bodies were found. Nobody showed up alive anywhere. The ocean just kind of swallowed them all along with the lifeboat. So in the wake of the discovery, there was a salvage hearing. So in the context of like sea law, a salvage hearing is a legal process where a court or a panel determines the amount of the award that you get as a salver. So if you come across a boat or a ship that's been abandoned or it's like damaged in some way, and either there's nobody on it because it's abandoned, or they can't get it to shore because they are in distress. If you get it safely to shore, you get a salvage payment. So you get an award for that.
You get the ship.
So they had this hearing, and the judge was suspicious of the crew of the De Gratia, which was the ship that saw the Mary Celeste. I'm like totally losing focus here. The judge was suspicious that the De Gratia crew might have actually come across the ship, gotten on there, killed everybody, and then claimed to have found it so they could get the salvage payment, because the ship was like really high value, so the salvage payment was supposed to be really high. There wasn't any evidence of this. And in the end, the judge did award the crew a salvage payment, but much less than what would have been anticipated. The Mary Celeste herself lived on for a few more years because she was still seaworthy. She changed hands a couple times, but was never really a successful ship again. And eventually, in 1885, her owner wrecked her intentionally as part of an insurance fraud scheme.
Oh.
Yes. But the legend only grew. Today, the Mary Celeste is one of the most famous true ghost ships in history, not because of a haunted crew or blood-soaked decks, but because of the absence, the fact that 10 people disappeared without a single clear clue. It's a mystery that invites our imaginations to fill in the gaps. Fun fact, Arthur Conan Doyle, who is responsible for Sherlock Holmes, he actually wrote a fictional short story about the ship. The story is called J. Habakkuk Jephson's Statement, and it is told from the perspective of a survivor of the ship, but it's based on the Mary Celeste. The ship in the story is named Marie Celeste, and because the story became very popular, that spelling has actually like overtaken the Mary Celeste. So a lot of times you'll see it referred to as the Marie Celeste, and that is a mistake. So any thoughts about that ghost ship? What might have happened to Mary Celeste?
Well, Drew had to step away for a hot minute.
She did.
It's weird.
Yeah. I feel like that's the best summary of it.
Well, like, or maybe they thought they saw, like, a pirate ship coming, and then they were like, oh, crap, like, we gotta, like,
run. Just, yeah, abandon ship, because they'll focus on the ship then.
Yeah. And then they were, like, lost at sea. Sad. What happened to the 7-year-old?
As far as I could tell, he was raised by the grandmother that he stayed with. Yeah, it seems like, I don't know what, but it definitely seems like something happened that made the captain be like, we will be safer in the lifeboat than on the ship.
Yeah.
And from all accounts, he was a very, he was a good captain. And wouldn't just, like, you know, not, like, the type to jump at shadows or whatever. So they seem to think that he would have at least thought he had a good reason for getting everybody into the lifeboat.
Yeah.
And I feel like you would...
wife and 2-year-old there, too.
Right, I was just going to say that you would have to be really convinced that something was wrong to put your wife and your 2-year-old into the boat. I can't imagine that we'll ever know for sure what happened there because, well, you know, nobody survived.
All right. Yeah, it had to be something that happened like all at once too, because otherwise you'd think like if it was like a sickness that was like slowly taking them out one by one, that they would have still recorded it in the
Yeah, I didn't say that either. The log didn't show anything weird happening leading up to that last day that they recorded their position.
I love how aliens just come out in these cases.
Always a theory. All right. If the Mary Celeste left us with more questions than answers, our next story proves that eerie silence and unanswered mysteries weren't limited to the 1800s.
It did leave us with more questions than answers.
Yes.
You didn't answer anything, Lacey.
I know. I have more questions. No answers. Fast forward nearly a century to the South Pacific, where a vessel called the MV Joyita was found drifting far off course, its crew and passengers gone without a trace. What was left behind was a working radio, untouched cargo, and a medical bag with bloodied bandages. Let's take a look at one of the strangest maritime disappearances of the 20th century. The MV Joyita was a merchant vessel that went missing in 1955, which wasn't that long ago. It was less than 100 years ago. And was later found adrift with no trace of its 25 passengers and crew. MV stands for motor vessel, and Joyita is Spanish for little jewel. Yeah, the Joyita was a small merchant ship. Before we go on, Drew, go back one slide. I forgot that I put that up there. So this was just like the last one, the Mary Celeste. So they were going from New York to Genoa, you know, and they would have had to like dip down there to go like
through. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's self-explanatory. There's arrows.
Well, it feels like where they last logged, they seemed like they were in the right trajectory.
Yeah, they seemed like they were on track.
And then it must have went just north with
the drifted a little bit. Yeah. So. Okay. The Joyita was a small merchant ship, 69 feet long, with a reputation for being tough. It was originally built as a luxury yacht, but then was later used by the U.S. Navy during World War II, and after the war was converted into a trading and charter vessel. The hull of the, I won't say ship, but it's not really a ship. The hull of the Julieta was cork-lined, so she could take on a lot of water and still float, as you can see in this picture here, where she is floating. She's very hard to sink, and it's not like the Titanic, where they're like, oh, even God couldn't sink this ship, and then they hit an iceberg and sank. She really could take on a lot of water and was just so buoyant from the cork that she would stay afloat.
So what you're saying is the Titanic needed cork.
Yes. Okay. Now you know. Despite her durability, she was already considered a bit run down by the 1950s. The mid-1950s.
She went through World War II. Leave her alone.
Yeah, listen, she's a tough old bird. On October 3rd, 1955, the Julieta left Samoa, bound for the Tokelau Islands, which is a territory of New Zealand, in a trip that should have taken 2 days. On board were 16 crew members and 9 passengers, so 25 total, including a doctor who was traveling to perform surgery on a patient. The cargo included medical supplies, timber, empty oil drums, and food, but the Julieta never arrived. Imagine waiting for surgery and being told that your surgeon just, like, disappeared in the ocean. 5 weeks later, on November 10th, a captain of another merchant ship spotted the Julieta drifting about 600 miles off course near Fiji. So this is a picture of it when it was found. So it was found listing on its side like this. When rescuers boarded, they found a scene that would puzzle investigators for decades. The vessel was badly listing to one side, but still afloat, thanks to its cork-lined hull. The engine was out. The radio was tuned to the international distress frequency, but there were no people aboard. All 25 individuals were gone. What they did find raised more questions than answers. The lifeboats and dinghies were missing. The logboat, navigational equipment, and the captain's papers were gone. But most of the cargo was still there. The doctor's bag was found with bloodied bandages, suggesting that somebody had been injured. And oddly, the ship's clock had stopped at 10:25. The lights were still on. There was food in the galley that had been prepared and then not eaten. There were no clear signs of a struggle. No storm had been reported. The hull had some damage, likely from rough seas, but nothing catastrophic. So why did everyone abandon ship?
Pirates.
One theory is that the Julieta began taking on water due to a broken cooling pipe, flooding the bilge. With the pipes not working, no, the pumps not working, and the ship listing badly, the captain, worried she would sink, may have ordered everyone to abandon ship. But, I guess I already did explain this ahead of time, she was practically unsinkable. She had so much built-in buoyancy that even filled with water, she wouldn't go down. Captain Miller, who was a veteran sailor, should have known this. So he shouldn't have risked everyone's life in lifeboats in the open sea when the ship was still floating. He shouldn't have panicked and set everybody into the lifeboats. Another theory is that something went wrong, like a disagreement or panic among the crew and passengers. Perhaps the captain was injured and was the person who the bloodied bandages had been, you know, fixing up, and the others decided to leave because they didn't have the captain's leadership anymore. There is a darker possibility. The ship's route passed near areas known for black market activity. Could the Julieta have been intercepted by pirates or smugglers? The missing cargo manifest supports this idea, but why would they leave the rest of the cargo behind? Some even believe there might have been foul play among the crew. Others have speculated that the American government or military may have been involved in some kind of secret operation, though there is no evidence of this, so there's always a conspiracy theory. Ultimately, no trace of any of them was ever found. No bodies, no life rafts, right? No bodies, no life rafts, no clothing, no equipment, none of the papers. They just vanished. The Julieta was eventually repaired and returned to service, but she was never quite the same. In 1956, she was declared unseaworthy and taken out of service permanently. Her name became a symbol of one of the Pacific's most enduring maritime mysteries. What do you think?
Okay, I like your idea with the captain being the one who was injured. Do the other people know that she was unsinkable?
I don't know. The only person I know about was that the captain was a veteran captain that he should have been aware. But like
if he was incapacitated. If I was on a boat and it started to do that shit, I would get off the boat.
I'd stay on.
Bailey's going down with the ship.
I am a captain, so yes.
I've seen Titanic. I'm not getting in the water. Fuck you, Rose.
Warmer Pacific over here?
Yes. Doesn't matter.
Warmer. I mean, but there are sharks.
Yeah.
That's so scary. Sure. Just bobbing around the open ocean, hoping somebody realizes you need rescue and that sharks don't show up soon. What was that ship?
Indianapolis.
Yes, and the tiger sharks?
Yeah. Ugh. Bailey, do you remember the movie Master of Disguise where he goes,
yes,
100 bodies going to the water?
Isn't that from Jaws?
Yes, but it's that character from Jaws is based off of one of the survivors from the SS Indianapolis.
Oh.
Yeah, I listened to like a podcast about that, and it's upsetting. Like this one guy was so tired, he just kept trying to drown himself, and his friend had to keep saving him. Like he would just let go of the boats because they would take turns.
Yeah.
Of who had to sit in the water. And he would just keep letting go and trying to like drift off, and his friend would have to keep grabbing him and pulling him back up.
Did he survive?
I don't remember.
Oh.
But then the most upsetting part is that like it wasn't the captain's fault, but afterwards the government needed to blame somebody and they weren't going to take any responsibility. So they blamed the captain. And he was like he got a lot of shit for it because so many people died and it wasn't his fault and he ended up killing himself.
Didn't it take like decades until he was like publicly exonerated?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When they came out and said, you know what, it actually wasn't the captain's fault. Anyway.
So I think also that's the one that most makes sense. Not that we have a lot of the details, but that something happened to the captain. And so he wasn't able to say, no, the ship's fine. It's not going to sink. Yeah. But they were like, the captain's injured. The doctor tried to patch him up, but he's unconscious. The ship is clearly tilting. Let's get off.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? If you look in this picture here from this one angle, well, okay. I thought it through before I said it. I was going to say, we can see land behind them. So you would think that if they got into a lifeboat, they would have been able to get to land pretty quickly. But this is just where it was found. We don't actually know when they abandoned ship. Or like even like if it was in the middle of the night or something, you know?
So. Especially if it's still floating. It's probably just like drifting along.
Yeah, because it was a full, it was only supposed to be a 2-day trip, and it was, what did we say? A month later is when it was found.
Whatever happened to the guy waiting on surgery?
Hopefully they got somebody else in there. And this doctor wasn't like a one-of-a-kind surgeon.
I feel like he probably died.
The Joyita's mystery is chilling because it's real. Documented, investigated, and still unsolved. But now we enter murkier waters. Our next ship may or may not have existed at all, but that hasn't stopped it from becoming one of the most enduring and terrifying ghost ship legends out there. It begins with a cryptic radio transmission. I died. Yeah?
Was the video game based off of this?
Yes!
Okay, good.
We're going to talk about that. This is the story of the SS Urang Medan. Whether it's fact or fiction, it is unforgettable. This is one of the creepiest and most disputed maritime stories out there. This story comes from the late 1940s, somewhere in the Strait of Malacca, between Malaysia and the island of Sumatra. Whether it really happened or not is part of the mystery. The legend begins with a distress call, a chilling, fragmented radio transmission picked up by several nearby vessels. It said, SOS from Urang Medan, we float. All officers, including the captain, are dead, lying in chart room and bridge. Possibly whole crew dead. I die. And then, silence. One of the ships that reportedly received the call was the Silver Star, an American merchant ship. The Silver Star altered course to assist and locate the Urang Medan not long after, adrift, silent, and apparently undamaged. But what they found on board was the stuff of nightmares. The boarding party discovered bodies scattered throughout the ship. Crew members were sprawled on the decks, eyes wide open, mouths frozen in horror, arms outstretched as if trying to fight something off. Even the ship's dog was dead, his face twisted in a snarl. Sorry. I didn't do it.
You have to warn us.
I actually forgot about that until I was reading the sentence, and I thought in my head, oh no. That's the only one in the story, in the episode.
You could have omitted.
Sorry. It's too late now. There were no injuries, no signs of struggle, no blood, just an overwhelming atmosphere of dread. Below deck, the air was reportedly frigid, despite the tropical heat outside. And as the boarding party prepared to tow the vessel to port, smoke began rising from the ship's hold. Moments later, a massive explosion ripped through the hull. The Urang Medan sank beneath the waves, taking with it any chance of a proper investigation. If this sounds too dramatic to be real, you're not alone. The story has been retold in various forms since the 1940s, but there's no definitive proof the Urang Medan ever existed. No ship by that name appears in maritime records. No confirmed wreck has ever been found, but that hasn't stopped the theories from piling up. Some say the ship was smuggling hazardous materials, possibly nerve gas or potassium cyanide, and that a leak caused the toxic death of the crew. Others suggest it was carrying wartime chemicals or radioactive substances, remnants of secret World War II operations. That would explain the strange positions of the bodies, the lack of wounds, and the mysterious cold. Then there are those who go further. Paranormal explanations abound. Ghostly forces, a cursed artifact, or something even darker. Some tie the story to aliens, psychic phenomena, or government conspiracies, because of course they do. Skeptics point out that the story was first published in a series of sensational articles, often lacking sources. There's evidence that a version of the story appeared in Dutch shipping circles as early as 1948, but again, no logs, no registration, no insurance paperwork. Some suspect it was wartime propaganda, or a cautionary tale that took on a life of its own. Still, certain versions of the story name real ships, like the Silver Star, which did exist. And that keeps just enough plausibility alive to keep the legend going. The mystery of the SS Urang Medan isn't just about whether the story is true, it's about how it feels. The haunting radio transmission, the image of frozen, terrified sailors, the sudden explosion, whether fact or fiction, it sticks with you. The name Urang Medan may be ringing a bell for some of our listeners. It should for Drew. I put in parentheses, pause for confusion.
For who? Me?
Yeah, in case you hadn't immediately picked up on it.
It's the same fucking name.
Are you confused?
If you ever played
any video games. I'm confused as to why she thought I was confused.
It's been a while since you played it, I think. It was the first one. So the Dark Pictures Anthology.
First of all.
The collection of games.
Yeah. It's not the first one. Until Dawn. Secondly.
Was Until Dawn part of that anthology?
It's part of the. It was produced by the same people. I don't know if it's part of the same, like, universe or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway. I was just talking about my beloved video games.
You were. One of the games in the Dark Pictures Anthology, if you're one of those people who likes to play the games where you have to make choices, and it's like the butterfly effect kind of thing, these games are like that. One of the games is called Man of Medan, and you are on a ship. And it was based on the Urang Medan. The legend of it, the story of it. So what do you guys think? True or false? Fact or fiction?
I feel like maybe it's close to truth, but it was told so many different times that it's just like
changed story.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's dramatized.
Yes. I think there probably was a ghost ship in the area that was found with maybe some bodies on it, but I think that they have, as it's been told over and over again, it has just
gotten like more creepy.
Yeah.
I vote true just because I want creepy stuff to.
Yeah, it's more fun if it's true.
I do like a ghost ship story that's like scary.
Have you seen, there's a, like, I think you can find a ghost ship on Google Maps.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll find it for you. You continue.
If the Urang Medan is legend wrapped in fragments of fact, our final ship takes us fully into myth. We cannot talk about ghost ships without talking about the most famous legendary ghost ship. We are sailing into the legend of the Flying Dutchman. So our first two ships were real, for sure. Urang Medan, maybe. And now Flying Dutchman, full legend. But we couldn't talk about ghost ship and not mention it. Our final ghost ship tonight isn't one that was found drifting empty at sea. It's one that has never been found. A ship that has never docked. A ship that, if you believe the legend, is still sailing the oceans, doomed to never reach land. This is the quintessential ghost ship. The Flying Dutchman is so woven into folklore that it's been referenced in operas, novels, and even Disney movies. But like all legends, its origins are murky, and the truth is tangled up in centuries of fear, faith, and folklore. So where did the story begin? The most commonly accepted version of the tale places the Flying Dutchman in the 17th century, during the height of Dutch naval power. According to the legend, the ship was captained by a man named Hendrik Vanderdecken. As the story goes, Vanderdecken was sailing around the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa when a terrible storm struck. Most captains would have turned back, but Vanderdecken, stubborn and defiant, refused. Some versions say he swore to God or the devil that he would round the Cape even if it took him until the end of time, and so the curse was cast. The Flying Dutchman was doomed to sail the seas forever, never able to make port, its crew trapped in an eternal voyage. Sightings of the ship became omens of doom. Sailors claimed to see it through the fog, glowing with an unnatural light, its sails tattered but full, its crew waving desperately or standing silently. And then, just as quickly as it would appear, it would vanish. The first printed account of the Flying Dutchman came in the 1700s, though tales of ghostly ships were common long before that. What makes this story stand out is its persistence. Generations of sailors swore they'd seen it, often in dangerous conditions, near storms, in fog banks, or around treacherous waters. One of the most famous alleged sightings comes from 1881. Prince George of Wales, who would later become King George V, was serving in the British Royal Navy and recorded seeing the ship while aboard the HMS Bashante. According to the logbook, quote, a strange red light as of a phantom ship all aglow, in the midst of which light the masts, spars, and sails of a brig 200 yards distant stood out in strong relief, end quote. The next morning, the sailor who had first spotted the ship fell to his death from the rigging. Whether coincidence or curse, the story only added to the legend. Of course, skeptics have offered explanations. There are something called a Fata or Fata Morgana mirage, which is an optical illusion created by light bending over the horizon. It can make ships appear to float, shimmer, or glow. Others blame sleep deprivation, sea madness, or simply the power of myth. But none of that really explains how the same story has appeared in so many cultures. Versions of the Flying Dutchman appear in the folklore of America, Germany, England, the Netherlands, and Scandinavia. Some say the ship is trying to deliver letters. Others say it seeks redemption. Some even claim the ship only appears to those who are about to die at sea. And then there's the idea that the Flying Dutchman is more than a ship. It's a symbol of obsession, of defiance against the elements, of man versus nature. Composer Richard Wagner wrote an entire opera about it, transforming the tale into a romantic tragedy. In his version, the cursed captain can only be freed if he finds a woman who loves him faithfully until death. Every 7 years, he's allowed to come ashore in search of her. He never succeeds. And maybe that's the point. The Flying Dutchman isn't about a ship at all, it's about what haunts us. The things that we chase endlessly and the mistakes we can't undo. That was deep. Thoughts on the Flying Dutchman?
That's not what happens in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's true. Good thought.
Thanks. It's a very teacher moment that she just gave me.
That's an excellent thought, Bailey. Maybe not exactly what we were talking about, but just a good thought.
She asked if I had any thoughts. I'm saying that his rendition of the story is not what Disney came up with.
Have you ever asked like children if they have any questions? Because they will raise their hand and say, one time I went to the park. And then you're just like, that's not a question. She said it to you the same way teachers talk to kindergartners.
No, I get it.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to make sure. Sorry.
I felt the talking down.
Condescension.
Yeah, I felt that.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's whatever.
I don't think you should apologize. I thought it was warranted.
I'm not sorry.
Good.
Okay, next time Lacey asks for, like, thoughts, I'll just stay silent, and we can just have a silent podcast.
It was a good thought.
Well, now you're just being...
Drew, what are your thoughts?
About what? The Flying Dutchman?
Yeah, the Flying Dutchman.
I don't think it was
Or any of the ghost ship, because that's my last one. What? Any ghost ship thoughts?
They're cool and spooky, and I don't like the ones that we know are real, and we just, like, don't know what happened to them.
Yeah. I like a spooky ghost ship story, like the Uring Medan one, where it's like, oh, there's all these bodies with horrified expressions on their shapes. But also, like, the idea of a whole crew just vanishing.
Yeah. I prefer the Medan one because, like, at least I know where the people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, cool.
Any final thoughts?
I sent you some pictures, Lacey, because while I was in vacation, I went to Niagara Falls, and there's a sunken ship there. Do you see the pictures?
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. Shut up.
It is cool.
Drew, do you want to come out and talk about how big one of the lakes that you saw was?
Oh, yeah. So some of our loyal listeners may know that I didn't have a full grasp of how big the Great Lakes were. But we went to Lake Ontario, and it legit looks like an ocean. Like, it's huge.
Yeah.
So
I was thinking, when I was putting this together, one of my urban legend episodes that I did, like, way early on, there was, and then I couldn't go back and, like, find it in my notes, but there was a ship on one of the Great Lakes. And I remember that was one of the times that it came up, and you were like, why are there ships on lakes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I see why.
Well, that was sinister.
We were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening. This is not what I say.
That's because you usually race to cut the first person off.
Thanks, guys.
Lacey always does the ending.
Yeah, but it's my turn.
Hmm.
Damn it, Lacey.